even know me at all, know me for my work with everyday angels. The divinely inspired art that has been created to touch hearts and lift souls and to inspire. And usually when I give my talks, I share something of my story about how I got into this work. And when Eric asked me to do a talk this time, normally he doesn't really ask me what I'm going to talk about, he just lets me get on with it. And for once he said to me, have you got anything different to talk about this time? And I thought, there hangs a question. And indeed I have got something very different to talk to you about today. And I'm sure you will appreciate, as we only actually have this like barely an hour together, this is going to be the top and tail of what I have to tell you about. We stand in all humbleness before you and present the Archaeons. Let that word just fly around a little bit. Let it just settle where it will with you. And see how it feels to you as this unfolds. Archaeons. What does it feel like? Last year, in October, I had what I would describe as a clarion call. And it's a kind of a knowing, it's an imperative. It may as well be trumpeted through the heavens. That's how it feels. And the clarion call gave me two challenges. The first challenge I was given as an artist and as a light worker was that I was asked to represent the archangels again in a way that they had never been seen before. I was asked to paint them, but I was given no indication of what was going to make them different. Why was this going to be any different from what we've had before? I'm very familiar with the archangels. I've painted many of them many, many times. I've had that privilege. And so that seemed quite easy. I thought, yeah, why not? No problem. The second part of the clarion call was a little bit more tricky, because what I was asked to do was to foregather a group of light workers who would receive this energy and would anchor it into the earth plane. And at this point, I wasn't actually made aware of what this energy was going to be. All I knew was it was linked to the archangels. And I was told the archangels were stepping into a new space. They were in effect being promoted, ascended. They have waited forever, for eternity, for this moment to come. And the date I was given for this auspicious moment to happen was the 22nd of December. Well, you can imagine, Christmas round the corner, mince pies to make, a few presents to get wrapped, a few little chores to be doing. And I'm thinking to myself, 22nd of December, it's not the most practical day of the year, is it? To be full calling people and asking them to come to something, to see something you've not even done yet. And who were these people? Was I supposed to be contacting heads of state? Was I supposed to be contacting universally known light workers? Was I going to have to trawl the internet and beg people to come from countries far and wide? And I was told, no. These are people who are known to you. These are the workers. These are the people who have rolled their sleeves up and simply got on with it. And that is who you need to contact. And so I very quickly found myself writing a list of names. And some people on that list of names were people who were very well known to me. Some of them kind of knew them, but they weren't exactly in my immediate circle of my friends, if you like. And so this sat with me a little bit uncomfortably, because there was a bit of an embarrassment, isn't there, about organising a last minute party and expecting people to drop everything and turn up. So I did two things. And the first thing I did was I sought the guidance of a very amazing lady who channels Melchizedek, and her name is Claire Montanaro. And when she gives a reading, this is not kind of dancing around your handbag stuff, I mean, it gets straight to the point. And I had this appointment, and my question was, am I going completely mad? Am I barking up the wrong tree? Or have I read this message right? Because to be honest, you know, even in the years I've been doing this work with the angels, I don't kid myself that I know all the answers. I don't kid myself that I get it right all the time. And so when I have the possibility of cross-checking my information, I always will use that. I honour it in that way. And so I sought the guidance of Melchizedek. And before I even had a chance to say a word, Melchizedek confirmed to me that this indeed was the job. This is what I've been called and asked to do. And he asked me how many people there were on the list. And I said, 13. And he said, 13 is good, but 12 is perfect. So I thought, right, I'll go back to my list. And I looked at my list. And when I looked at it, there was one name on it who I knew in my heart of hearts was on it, because I thought I ought to, because there would be ructions to pay if they knew I'd been up to something interesting and I'd not invited them. And so I now had to have the courage to take that name off the list. And there was then my 12 names. At that point, I thought, I can confidently send an invitation out to these names. So I did. And the invitation itself was channeled. And in the meantime, I also contacted somebody called Steve Judd. Now, Steve Judd is an astrologer. But he's, again, you know, he's not a kind of like wishy-washy kind of guy. He gets straight to the point. And I asked him, I said to him, look, I want you to look at the 22nd of December. And he said, it's the solstice. I said, no, it's a bloody solstice. I want to know the ins and outs, the ups and downs, the aroundabouts and the side to side. Leave no stone unturned with this. I want to know it all. And I didn't tell him why. I didn't tell him anything about the work. And he didn't ask. And he came back to me with a CD. And on that CD was information that made my hair curl. And this is possibly the result. But I literally, my hair was standing on end when I heard it. And it was not even the detail of what he delivered. It was his voice, the mounting excitement in his voice as he himself revealed layer after layer of information about what this day actually meant. And I'm not going to tell you the whole thing because it was an hour's reading, but the top and tail of it was this. And this is from my workshop leaflet, but I've just got a... The last bit is what you need to really know. On this particular day, the Sun, Mercury, Jupiter and Pluto were all within a degree or so on top of galactic centre, about to shift over into a new age, all within a week of this particular lineup. Mars was also in opposition with a Moon-Mars conjunction on the 24th of December. The chances of all these things happening in that particular way, in that particular moment, were 1 in 10 million. The chances of me asking that bloody question were probably even greater, because I don't really do astrology. And what he said was, this implies an unprecedented moment where energy is required and triggered to open up a conduit or a portal. And he said, let there be light. Information will be made available, and a non-physical shockwave will affect us universally at a psychic level. It will be a time of apocalypse. And he qualified that with the original meaning of apocalypse, revelation. Astrologically, this is going to be one of the biggest and most significant moments to date. A more critical moment will happen in August 2010, but that will be dependent on this moment of solstice, 22nd of December 2007. So when I got that CD, that was my second level of qualification for understanding that this indeed was what it felt like. And, of course, you know, life didn't come to a grinding halt. Stuff still had to be done. There was still, you know, stuff to be done in the house. Christmas was looming. I'd still got events. I had customers phoning me, asking me to do paintings for them. So it wasn't like I suddenly got put into this little bubble of separation where I could wholly focus on this. No! This all had to be incorporated into what was happening generally. And I was actually very aware of the fact that I had now sent the invitations out, and broadly speaking, everybody who had the invitation said yes. They had no idea what they were saying yes to, but they just knew they had to say yes. And again, that was another qualification. When people respond in that way, I always know it's something that is of magnitude. So, a party was planned, but we didn't have any entertainment. And I was planning, I was taking part in an event in Cambridge, and it was this was right at the end of November. And up to that point, I still didn't have any paintings. I didn't even know what these paintings were going to be like. All I knew was I had this sense of hugeness. And I couldn't get a real kind of grasp of them, a real kind of feel of who they were, or kind of what they were going to physically look like, or how I was going to do them. And right at the end of November, just as I was beginning to panic, I got the green light. Order your canvases. And what they asked me to order were these canvases that were 6 foot tall by 2 feet wide. Now, I've never worked on that kind of scale before. And I didn't actually know where these canvases were going to come from, because my normal art shop doesn't have such things. But as always happens, a leaflet fell off my shelf that had got the exact thing on, and I phoned these guys up in Ilkley in Yorkshire from the art shop, and I said, I need 6 canvases. We haven't got any. So I said, when are you going to get some in? They said, well, we don't know. We haven't ordered any, but there's a container coming on Wednesday, and if there's some in it, we can say the same for you. So, well, you know what happened? Of course, the container came, and it had got 6 canvases on it. Well, on the Friday, I was literally loading the van up to go and do my event in Cambridge, and this TNT truck arrived with a great big brown box. And I could barely touch it. I don't know how this guy had even driven it, because even though in that box were bare canvases, they were already chosen and energetically imprinted for this work. And it was like, and I literally got this box upstairs into my workroom, and I said to my husband, do not under any circumstances touch that box whilst I'm away. On your own head be it. And I shut them in the room, and that was it, the door was shut. Well, I'm not the kind of person for wishing the moments away, but this event at Cambridge dragged it bloody feet. All I wanted to do was to get home to come this word. But right at the last minute, I was just in my final sort of stages at Cambridge, and I thought, just look to the ladies, and I twinkled off. And I spotted some very interesting looking crystals, a guy things on the table, but little boxes. And they look just to me like kind of quite scabby bits, but all the enthusiasm for these pistols, and I couldn't look. And I said, oh, how much do I need for these? Well, what it actually was mica, which became part of this piece here. But it was just little flakes, and I said, oh, how much do you want for this? He said, oh, 50 pence. I said, I can't give you 50 pence, I'll give you a pound. I insisted on paying this man a pound for this little box of bits. And I came away, and I knew that, you know, that's why they dragged me out in Cambridge, because I needed to get these pieces of crystal. Well, in this period of time leading up to me starting work, people were bringing me things. Crystals were coming to me. Things were coming to me. Essences, CDs, all sorts of stuff was coming to me. And I thank you very much. I've no idea what it was for, but then it all became very clear what it was about. And once I started work on these pieces, it was a process like I have never entered before. My workroom at home is actually quite small, and I don't have the facilities for big easels. And so what I had was I had two crates, plastic crates from B&Q, and these, one at a time, laid across the top. It was like an operating table. And I got my old pinny on that's covered in all my paint from the Everyday Angels and monkey flip flops and my brushes and everything. And I was literally taken out almost of myself. And this work began. Now, each of these was prepared initially with a white base. And as I was painting this base in, my hand was being moved in a very particular way. And each one was different. It was like an imprinting was happening. The other thing that was very unusual was that somebody had sent me a CD. And this CD was by a guy called Tom Kenyon. I don't know if anybody's familiar with his work. He uses sound, and it's called droning, and it is bloody droning, like constipation. Dreadful. Didn't resonate with me at all. And every time I put the CD on, I thought, well, thank you very much to my friend who sent it, but really, I can't be doing with it. But once I did this work, this CD was on pretty much full belt the whole time on constant loop. And what I realised was, it was not constipation at all. It was actually the birthing sounds of these beings coming in. Now, once the bases were down and I started to apply the colour was applied directly to the canvas. There was a very nice little palette and a bit of a brush and a dob and a daub. This was being applied, and I got a trowel and I was scraping this stuff on. And you can see from down the sides of these canvases, the slippings everywhere. The dog was wearing it, the cats were wearing it. It was in everything. And the paint was going on so fast, I could barely keep up with it. And not only was the paint going on, but there were crystals and pigments and essences going into each one of these. Now, as each one came to a point of finishment, as I say, my space is not that big, so I'm a bit limited as to where these things could go. But as each one was kind of sort of ready, touchable, picked them up, and it was like they had the most incredible hangovers. I could tell they felt dreadful. They were totally sort of totally unintegrated. And, you know, if an angel can have a headache, that's what they had. They felt dreadful. And so I was able to have them two at a time in the back bedroom on the back bed, double bed, side by side. And I shut them in there, and I pop in every so often and just see, are you all right? And I've got my ting bar, so I just... Mary, do you want another ting? Are you all right for tings? Yeah. And then a bit of a spray of rescue remedy, or maybe burn a bit of a knife champer. But... in all seriousness, my job, I know it sounds mad, it was mad, but my job was to make sure that their energy was integrated as painlessly for them as possible. And I had to go through this process with six of them, And if I tell you, I've never actually physically given birth, but I kind of had a pregnancy with these foods because I had the most bizarre food cravings. I had mood swings like you wouldn't believe. And I mean, one of the things that I found myself on a bender with was blue cheese. I don't even like blue cheese, but blue cheese has copper running through it. And copper was the thing that I needed, and the copper was very grounding. And the copper is also related to the Azrael aspect. And Azrael is about change. So, and there were other things that I won't mention to you because they're quite revolting. Anyway, when this process was finished, I kind of lost about half the stone, almost like overnight. And it was just very, very odd. Anyway, it was like, thank God, I've got some paintings now to show people when they come on the 22nd. In the meantime, as this was all going on, one of the people who had been invited contacted me, and she's a very humble girl, very humble, and she had a dream, a vision, if you like, and it revolved around the number 549. Now, she didn't do numerology, but she knew by the way this number kept pestering her that there was something important about it. And anybody would, she Googled it. 549. And what 549 on Google search gave her was actually a reference to calendars, particularly referring to the difference between the Gregorian and the Georgian calendars. The Gregorian and Julian calendars, sorry. Now, what it showed was that the solstice of last year on the Gregorian calendar was at 6:08. And the solstice, according to the Julian calendar, was at 5:49. There was a window of 19 minutes there. And I'd asked everybody who was coming, because obviously it was not, we were all foregathering at my husband's workspace in Nottingham. Now, it was not practical for everybody to get there for that moment. But what we'd agreed was we were all going to light a small candle in our own space, and my husband and I were going to light a master candle in the space we were going to work in, and everybody's energy would anchor into that candle to bring everybody together at that moment. So it was important for us to know about this. But then she had a message, and what it said was, chosen ones that must not be seen when the dark and light emerge. We must get through the portal before the rest do. Why? Because our work is going to be done at a level that will guide the lost ones that get left behind or slow down through the door. We will be highly protected once we've gone through the point that has been created for us. We do not go into the shift with the rest of humanity. We go through before to help them all through their journey. Darkness will not be able to see us. We will not exist in their world any longer. Our arms will reach out to hold and embrace. We will be given every tool, knowledge and guidance we need. All we must do is go through the right door. 549. So, I then had to contact the 12 again and say, set your alarms a little bit earlier, 5:49 if you don't mind. But the other thing I did was I contacted the astrologer again. And I said, look, please, just check out this 19-minute window with regard to where we are and what we're doing. And he did. And what he came back with was quite simply said, inexplicably, and only relating to Nottingham, at that 5:49 moment, Scorpio passed into Sagittarius. And he said, I don't know what you're up to, but whatever it is, don't start anything until 5:49, otherwise you're going to bring the old stuff through with you. So, it was starting to look like a plan. But it was important that, you know, this girl had the courage to bring this to the table, because to all intents and purposes it was my mission. And it's actually quite hard, you know, to have the confidence when you have an insight to share it. Sometimes you think other people know a lot more than you. Well, I can tell you that in the undertaking of this work and what was to come, I realised I don't have all the answers. I know I said that before, but I don't even have all the bloody questions. Sometimes people ask me a question and I think, actually, I wouldn't know that too, I don't know. So this whole thing was still very much open. So on the 22nd, we gathered in Nottingham, this group, and we also had the astrologer who was at Stonehenge. He was already planning to be at Stonehenge for that moment. And his job was to anchor the energy at Stonehenge for us, for them. And on the day we did the work, I can't really actually tell you what happened, because it was as though we were there but we weren't there. And at the end of the day, we really, none of us could really string sentences together. We really couldn't describe what had happened. But when we went through that exercise of the connection with the candle in that 19 minutes, there was myself and my husband Martin, and then two friends who would come to stay overnight with us, and the four of us held the compass points. And in that window, the silence was deafening. It was like, literally, we were taken to the void. We were taken out of that space. And when that moment came, when the 608 happened, it was like this click and we were back. And none of us had a clue where we'd been or what we were starving, and we were going over to breakfast. And then the other significant thing about the day that we were working with was that we had no name for this group of beings. Now, I've been told already that they were the archangels, but they were promoted, ascended energies. It was totally inappropriate for us to refer to them as archangels. What I did know was that their actual names of reference haven't changed. So, Metatroth, the voice of God. Azrael is the bringer of change. Archangel Michael, as was, now in his new guise. And significantly, for the first time, I was allowed to depict the sword. Those of you who are familiar with my work will have noticed that I never have the sword. The reason I never have the sword like this is because Michael has explained to me, and you can take this as you find it, but he's explained to me that the sword is inherently part of him. It is not a separate thing. He holds it within him. He is like the scabbard. He is the sheath. He holds the sword within him. So when you call on the sword of Michael, you literally are calling on a part of him. But for the first time ever, I was allowed to make this depiction. Raphael, Gabriel, and Uriel. And interestingly, the night before when we set up, Uriel launched himself full length on the floor in a complete drama queen style. And he shed half his balls off the head. I mean, you can see the imprints where those things went. And the temptation as an artist would have been to get terribly upset about it. Oh my God, you know, it would be precious painting. But I felt this was something that needed to happen. It was a release of energy. And each of these feels to me it's like a key. As knowledge is shared and expressed, these keys fall off. He's done it a couple of times since. None of the others do it, but he does. He's very partial to throw himself around. But we had, as I say, we had no collective name for them. And it was not until the 23rd when my friends who'd been staying over, who had been part of the day, they came down the following morning and they said, "Ooh, you've had an insight as to what this is about. You've had an insight as to what you might call." And they gave me a word, which was archon. And I thought, well, that's lovely, very nice, cosy, because one of my spirit guides is called archon. And it would have been a very nice little moment of warm fuzziness to say, "Oh, fancy me being given that name, you know, oh yes, lovely, grab it." It sounded quite nice. But I couldn't. The best I could say was, "Thank you." And I just let this word dance around a little bit. And it wasn't until Christmas Eve, because I have nothing else to do. No presents for the family, I can tell you. But I was just emailing these friends, really, to see if they got back okay. And I looked up, I have a little dictionary of angels and angelic terms, which I don't refer to very often, because part of the joy of my work is I know nothing. I enter into it completely bloody ignorant, and it's only afterwards the revelations come. But I looked up the word archon, and it said, "Archons are rulers, angels set over nations and identified or equated with aeons." Now, to me, aeons is like huge tracts of time, endless periods. And then I looked up aeons, and it gave a description of a celestial power of high order, a term designated to the first created being or beings with Abraxas at the head. Abraxas being the supreme unknown. Well, Abraxas is another story for another day, because Abraxas has turned up since. And it's an emanation of God. They are attributed with being the hypostatized thoughts of God. And they emanate in pairs, male and female, forming the plethora or fullness of God. Now, what's I'm leading this? What's happening in my head is, like the multiplex cinema screen when the Poland Dean adverts come on, and these words, letters, were flying into my head in bright, illuminated colours. And right across my head was written this word, archaeon. And I thought, right, that will be you then, archaeon. And I sounded it out, I called my husband, I said, "What do you think of this then? Archaeon." And I phoned my friends and I shared this word. And you know, it felt like we had always known it, that it had always been there. It had been waiting to be heard. And it needed to be set free. It needed to be allowed out there. And so over the Christmas period, the group of us who worked with this, we played with this word, we used it, we let it out, we let it free, bounced it around a bit. They are the principles of the Godhead. Now, what these beings have come to do is to challenge us as humans on our truth. So, no pressure there then. But they now represent a collective. Whereas before, as archangels, they were single individuals who sometimes teamed up if the job was a bit tricky, you know, perhaps calling a couple of others. But broadly speaking, they had always had an individual role to play. They now form this plethora, this collective consciousness, which in its, as a single consciousness, it is known as archaeon. They are the archaeons, as elements of the archaeon consciousness. And they work with us in a very, very different way. At my workshops, I invite people to actually stand in front of them, to get up close and personal with them, because the way the energy merges is quite different from the experience of the angels and the archangels. The simplest way for me to describe it is that if you're familiar with my painting of the angels, where it's a Y shape in a space, these are both the being and the space. And they have deliberately chosen this size and this way of presenting themselves so we may feel comfortable to engage with them. That we may feel okay to stand in front of them. And the message that, well, there are two messages, but I want to read this one to you first, because this is very important for us to understand. Beloveds, we come not to deliver you from your human state, but to celebrate you for the magnificent and able beings that you are. We stand before you in all humbleness and embrace you. As light touches light, our edges soften and blur to become as one. We have felt your anticipation and wonderment from the start. We seeded the possibility within your souls before you ever came here that you would know when you were called. We seem familiar, yes. You have indeed known us. Lifetime to lifetime, as each page was turned, our names were written beside your own in script of light. We know you as you know us. It is a universal and intimate union. Beloveds, accept your place in our hearts. For you can do what we cannot. You can speak our silence directly into the heart of humanity, flesh to flesh, bone to bone, carried on wings of light. Our allegiance is absolute. We are here, and we have declared our truth. Will you declare yours? As light workers, we often put ourselves down. We look up to these spirit guides, the angels, God. We think, well, what's this? This bloody 5 foot 6 frame of middle-agedness. What can I do? You can deliver what they cannot, because when you embrace this energy, when you embrace this truth, and when you see the words, the way these words are written, there is capitalization in the sentences that changes the emphasis of the words. There's nothing I was ever taught at school how to write like this. But when we actually have the courage to embrace our truth and actually accept who we are, then we can make a difference. The point of us all being here is to raise this vibration, to be part of this ascension process. You know, you've all heard about 2012. Well, don't kid yourselves. You're going to be standing at the bus stop, 2012, we're in a minute now. That celestial bus will have been and gone, because 2012 is already happening. We are part of it. You sitting in this room now is part of this process. The fact you have chosen to be here now, at the end of this very long day for many of you, to engage in this energy, to hear what I have had to say about this, means you are ready. And I have no idea what any of your work is. I don't care. It's none of my bloody business. It doesn't doesn't matter. It's your business, though. And it's your birthright to understand who you are and what your truth is, what it is actually about. I often get people who are at the start of their spiritual journey. I just want to put this in context for you. And they'll phone me up and they'll say, oh, I've seen one of your angels and I've had this Reiki treatment and I'm taking my Reiki masters, whatever, whatever. And they get to the point and they say, but I've got this mission. I've got to do something. And I've got to build this centre and I've got to get these therapists in and we've got to share energy. And they get themselves knickers in a twist, good style. And I let them go through the process and then I ask a very simple question. What were you actually asked to do? I've got to raise the vibration of humanity. Well, you don't need a bloody mortgage for that or a business loan. You just smile. That's it. Keep your twinkle bright. You never know when you might need it. The energy raises. The vibration raises. That is all it's about. And you all do it in your own way. It doesn't matter. The second message which I would like to share with you now is it's a little bit longer, and if you feel like you want to close your eyes to listen to this, please do, because it can be quite meditative and it will take you quite far and quite deep. So just make yourself comfortable. At the end of this I will actually sound that little tin bar, just so you know, and hopefully I can bring you back in. So when you hear this, I'll sound it three times, and when you hear that, that's your signal to come back, please. Okay. Set yourselves in. I, Metatron, have taken you to the void, that you may make your choice to declare yourself or turn away. My silence is held in the moment, between the thunder and the lightning, the prickling density of nothingness that crouches taut and honed, ready to explode with light and render those eyes open wide in the blindness of the all-seeing. My silence is the voice you have longed for, the one you have entreated to answer your prayers before you yet knew how to pray. Hear it now, and feel my voice upon your soul as it trembles with the fear of the unknown. I am steadfast and unflinching. Fear paralyzes, rendering the soul incapable of action or thought. I, Azrael, hold the heart of humankind and know it for what it is, a powerful and magnificent tool, facilitating discernment and guiding will. For many, the prospect of choosing change, even to improve the direst of circumstances, cannot be entertained. I am here to tell you, change nothing and nothing changes. I can show you the way, but I cannot undertake your path. This is your journey, and you will walk it only when you know what it is to be fearless. When you have abandoned fear, call on me, Michael, and I will offer you my own sword of truth, which will cut you free from the last vestiges of your enslavement. It is a mighty weapon, but I will not wield it for you. Only offer it that you may take it in your own hands. Your courage will give you strength to lift that hilt and swing the blade of light so high you cannot fail to sever that which holds you back. Your intention renders that sacred metal as nothing in your hands, and its light as it falls purifies and cuts clean. Healing takes courage, beloved. And you will now heal yourself. I, Raphael, can show you where the balms and ointments of pureness are to be found, that you may apply them to the bloodied rawness and pain of the wounds you have opened in your own release from the shackles of fear and doubt. Those self-inflicted chains have dug deep, and human flesh is soft and pale as dawn. It takes not well to this debasement. In healing, you are restored to wholeness, and in wholeness you be. My gift to you was never seen, as your eyes were still closed to potential and averted to the truth. I, Gabriel, have been entrusted with this cargo, as precious as the very moment of creation and as beautiful. In freedom from fear and with the courage to face the change that brings, you have been freed from your shackles. The pain they brought you is no more, healed with self-love and reduced to mere distant echoes of what was. So faint and hollow, it is as nothing. Now is the time to embrace me. Accept the gift. Reclaim what is already yours. The peace you seek is here. I, Uriel, hold the keys to your moment of acceptance. I hold them out to you, that you may take them and feel the lightness of their being within your grasp. Eternity has waited for this moment, and I am its custodian, the keeper of the silence and the bringer of the stillness. When your heart has wept enough, and its tears have fallen salted on the face of creation, you will know my peace and hold it treasured. Within peace you find all, and within all, peace. We stand before you in all humbleness and declare ourselves. We offer only our strength, our wisdom, our immeasurable gratitude, and our eternal love for all you are, all you have been, and all you ever will be. It is enough. Of this magnitude, stand in humbleness. But what I was shown and what I learned and what I understand by this is that when you put yourself in that place, when you stand in humbleness, you have in effect stripped yourself already of all artifice. Cut the crap, basically. Get to the core and the truth, with a capital T, of what has to be done or what has to be said. And it is a very empowering thing. And if you find yourself in a situation where you have to say something, or you have to stand in front of a group, you have to go and deal with somebody you don't want to deal with, try saying those words. You don't have to say them out loud if it feels uncomfortable, But when you say them, when you express them, it puts you in a very different space. And with this work we do, quite frankly, it is incredible enough. We don't have to pad it out with stuff. We don't have to put the wrappers and the gewgaws and the singing bells on it. It is enough. They've said so in their message. It is enough. And I've just been told by Eric, so I guess that's a sign. I stand before you in all humbleness. Now, I think I kind of slightly underestimated the enthusiasm for today, but I have got some handouts here. There's about 50 of them, so if there are people who are kind of together, if one of them takes one, I've actually said on it, I do not mind you copying this information and sharing it. You can't use it and sell it, you know, as that and sell it for 10 pence a copy, but, you know, share it out. Part of my work, part of my job, is to get this word in common usage. As angel or archangel or any of those other words out there are used, it has to be brought back. This is a word that has an ancient lineage, but it is very much of the future, it is very much of now. The other thing I haven't had a chance to talk to you about is the symbol, the wings of light symbol. Some of you may have seen already when I send things out, there's like a symbol that's got a rainbow circle and the divine trinity inside it. And wings, like a wings of Horus. And this was something that I was shown that represents the energy of this archaeon energy. Now, as I said to you earlier, this is the tip of the iceberg. I have, since these archaeon came, I have run a series of workshops. I've done 5 of them. One in Bournemouth, one in Bury, and the rest in Nottingham. Each time it has been different. Each time it has been incredible. Each time I could not possibly have imagined the feedback from the people who have taken part in it. And what I would say to you even today, just by you making that choice to spend this time in the danger, if it is appropriate for you to do so, you will go away with this energy imprinted within you. And whatever work it is you do, you will carry this, and it will help you, it will enhance, it will accelerate, it will magnify, it will make more fabulous whatever it is you already do. And even if you think you don't do anything, don't kid yourselves, of course you do. Everybody who's here does something. Even the little ones, they may not think they've started yet, but they have. And so, thank you for choosing to share this time and spread the word.
Thank you.